Hello and welcome to episode 26 of Not Another Rugby Podcast, brought to you by Ruck.co.uk and Altius Images. I'm your host, Todd Dudley, and later on I'll be joined by England international Jack Knoll to chat about his current Six Nations campaign. But for now, I'm joined, as always, by the editor-in-chief of Ruck.co.uk and my co-host, Steve Smith. Hello, Steve. How you doing, bud?
I'm not too bad, mate. Just a bit tired from moving house, but it's just a normal weekend. You finally get a weekend off the Six Nations, and this is what I've had to do.
That's how you've spent your fallow week, is it? Just moving a bunch of shit around.
I feel ready to go now.
Yeah, ready to go back into camp, hit the ground running.
Yeah, back into camp now.
Yeah, I'm pleased. Did it all go swimmingly? All goes pretty smoothly, or?
Pretty swimmingly, but it's one of them. It's just, you borrow your dad's mate's van, but that means you've got to give him the van back this morning. So you've got to fill the van and empty the van in the same day. It's never fun.
And we were just saying, you just end up with probably 10 times the amount of stuff you actually think you've got, don't you?
I've got, like, signed stuff by people who I don't even like. I'm not going to say any names. But just
mentioning,
like,
zero names on here.
Mentioning zero names, but I've just got bundles of rubbish.
Right, well, let's do some rugby, mate. Let's stick to what we know rather than packing and moving.
We'll have a quick chat before the main event.
Yeah, correct. So as we've just kind of mentioned, we're in a fallow week at the moment. So we'll have a look ahead rather than a look behind, a look ahead to the games coming up this weekend, which, as a recap for people, we've got some good games, to be fair. Got some good games. We've got Wales and France on Friday night at 8 o'clock, which should be pretty decent at the Principality. I think that should be decent. Then we've got on Saturday, we've got the battle for the wooden spoon, Italy-Scotland at 2:15, which it should be a great game. Apologies, Scottish fans. And then the big one, from our point of view anyway, England-Ireland at 4:45 on Saturday, which promises to be a pretty tasty affair, I think. Where do you want to start on that, mate? Where should we jump in? Should we go chronologically?
Yeah, we'll go chronologically and we'll start off under the lights in Cardiff.
So, Principality, basically, Wales aren't good enough to beat France, but how many points will being at the Principality give them? Will it be enough? That's the question.
No.
Okay, and on to the next game.
now under the wooden spoon. No, I think Wales are looking improved, but it's just like they're still, they're just missing too many players. I think Rhys Ahmed will probably come back in. I think he's doing all right now.
Yeah. It's just so fast.
I think what they're lacking at the minute is a balance, you know. They play, like you said, they're relying on that sort of momentum home crowd to try and drive them through games.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
because Gatland's rugby was a bit boring. They had like a system and it worked. Yeah. At the minute, I'm not really sure what Wales are. What are Wales? What are they trying to do?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm not entirely sure. If we go back in time to what was it, 8 or 9 days ago now, England beat Wales 23-19, which was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. To give some credit to Wales, they outscored us 3-1. It was just, you know, six Smith penalties that kind of did it in the end for England, but it wasn't as convincing as we maybe thought it was going to be from England, was it?
No, England just aren't clicking.
No.
Not to be fair, we thought this was going to be the most competitive Six Nations in years, and yeah, even though the table sort of suggested this, there's only two teams playing any decent rugby.
At the moment,
it's actually been quite a turgid affair so far, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's kind of been masked a little bit because the games have been close, which always adds a bit of tension and drama. But you're right. I think the actual quality of the rugby, other than France and Ireland, has been pretty poor. But I actually don't mind that when the games are close, to be honest. Like, I'd much rather a bit of a close grubby game than like one team playing some jouet and winning by 30 points. But
although we do hope France play with that and win by 30 points on Friday.
But yeah, that would be great on Friday. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'd like to see that. I mean, France just look, they're just a well-oiled machine. They know what they're doing. They could make 3 or 4 changes and the team would play in the same way.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about Wales lacking that balance. I think Faletau being back and playing as well as he did is obviously like great news for them. But I think I still think they're lacking a bit of bulk and size in the forwards. Like their front row were just non-existent kind of around the park. They just didn't carry at all.
I think their front row just sort of went through about a 3 or 4 year period of probably being one of the best. But I feel like front rows come in cycles, you know, because once they come to an end, you sort of got to try and find a whole new sort of international front row. I feel like Ireland at the minute are by far the best, but, you know, if overnight Furlong and Porter just sort of get a bit older, step down, it's like, who would then come in? It's all of a sudden it would change, and I think that's what happened with Wales. Because, you know, at one point when it was sort of, you know, Rob Evans, Kevin Owens, that's WWE. And they were sort of on the cusp of, you know, being in the lines. It shows you what sort of thing, how quickly it's changed.
I think their issue is that they're okay at the set piece stuff without being dominant. Mm-hmm. But then at the moment, you just need so much more from your front row in the game that's being played at the moment. Like, I think that they had like three carries for 0 meters in that game.
Well, that's where I sort of go back to when Rob Evans was playing. They said he was one of their main ball carriers, offloads, a bit like Mako was as a keeper for England. England have just such a long list of loose heads to pick from. It's ridiculous.
They do. And they can all just do like an unreal job. Like, I thought Genge was absolutely outrageous in that game, by the way.
He was so good.
So good.
That balance right at the moment, I think, with Genge starting. You've got Big Joe on the bench wearing something ridiculous, probably.
Yeah. Did you see Genji's gas? He didn't quite get there, but did you see Genji's gas like on the wing to try and get back and make that cover tackle?
That's why he's called the Rhino, man.
Mate, I think he like nearly caught up with, I think it was Cuthbert or maybe Liam Williams. He nearly caught up with him. I was like, what the hell is going on?
I love how Wales fans now love Cuthbert. It's like you went for years of him being your scapegoat.
He was very good though, wasn't he? Let's give
him. Yeah, he was. That's what I mean. But I never thought he was that bad, to be honest.
No, I'm a big fan of a big winger. I like it.
I do think that, like we said, Wales had a way of playing, and I think it started under Gatland. It sort of decreased the effectiveness of wingers, and that's why you saw North and Cuthbert getting all the stick.
Yeah, I think Wales' main issue at the moment is they don't have that extra ball player, which at the moment the patterns that are being played in rugby at the moment is literally like almost entirely dependent on having that second ball player, because everything gets played out like out the back of that first receiver. And at the moment, they just don't have anyone that can really do that. Like we mentioned, their front row can't do it, like Ireland's do and England's do. Tompkins and Watkin can't really do it. Liam Williams is good enough player, but he doesn't really fill into that role for whatever reason, because they probably prefer him to be out wide. Like, they brought Anscombe on for Williams towards the end of the game, because I think they were just desperate to get another ball player on the pitch.
It's great to see him playing regularly again. He had about 2 years out, didn't he?
Yeah, it's awesome. It is awesome. And I think he's class as well. Like, I think if he gets back to his best, he'll actually challenge Bigger.
Well, Bigger was done, wasn't he, until Anderson was injured. Really. Yeah. Bigger looked like he was yesterday's news, and all of a sudden he's been fly half for another 3 years.
Yeah, and now he's captain and went on the line, scored and all that. Yeah, so I think back to the Wales-France game, I basically think, even at the Principality, I think Wales could get an absolute humping, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I'm thinking about France by 20 points.
Yeah,
but I also wouldn't be surprised if Wales won by 2 points.
No, that would be very, very on brand for Wales and France, to be fair.
And France.
But
Wales seems to be a bit of a bogey team for them at times. I just can never forget, was it? I think it was a Friday night, wasn't it, in Paris, when they were miles ahead. And who was the winger who used to get in trouble a lot for diving and punching and stuff, wasn't it?
Hugier.
Yeah. Didn't he just drop the ball just before the line?
Yes.
And thank you, mate.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was two or three of them. But it's probably going to be Wales, because I don't think England will next week. So this is probably the best chance.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I quite like winning the Grand Slam now, to be fair.
Well, let's stay on France, because before, like, obviously Scotland are pretty up and down at the moment, which is pretty standard. But there was a genuine kind of hum and chatter before the game. You know, it's at Murrayfield. A lot of the France players haven't played at Murrayfield yet, and they're not going to know what it's like, and Scotland have got the weapons to upset them, and blah, 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 blah. But
sounded a bit like a library in there, to be honest.
Mate, holy shit, how good were France?
So good. They silenced the crowd. It was literally silenced for most of the game.
Just
Scotland,
incredible.
By the way, have been so poor this whole tournament. I'll go back, I've said it every week. They were not very good against England. No. They won the game, but they weren't very good.
England were just less good.
But they weren't, and they definitely weren't against Wales, and they definitely weren't against France.
No. But so how much of that? Well, firstly, I think Finn had a bit of a shocker, which is relatively rare these days. But I think he was pretty poor. But how much of Scotland being bad was just because France was so dominant? Like their defence was so intense. They were so clinical with the ball. Like, how much of it do you put down to Scotland not being very good as opposed to just France being too good?
It wasn't even where they made them look not very good. They just looked a bit too lightweight, didn't they? Like you just said, France bullied them. And it wasn't just in defence. When France had the ball, they could just bully them that way as well. You know, it didn't help that, you know, Scotland were missing quite a lot of key players. So they had quite an inexperienced, you know, pack.
Yeah.
You know, if you look, although they had, like, the lad who looked a little bit like, is Rory Darge came in.
Rory Darge, bloody good. Yeah.
He was great.
He was the pick of the bunch, wasn't he?
There wasn't many bright sparks from them. And I think the thing is, Russ, they've not clicked. They're same as England. It's hard for, with Smith kicks his goals and he does the basics right, where Russell, it is more about his flair.
Yeah.
While Smith is like a hybrid of, he's like a hybrid of like a Sexton and a Russell together.
Yeah.
I always say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Smith can get away when the team's not playing well, that looking all right. But when it just, everything Russell tries doesn't come off, it just, you saw fans on social media calling for Hastings to come in again.
Yeah. It baffles me that he's not in the squad, by the way.
I thought he must have been injured, you know. I went, you know, at first when he wasn't in, I thought, oh, he must be coming up.
I don't know what's going on there. Obviously, like, I guess being playing in England is like a slight mark against his name as opposed to Kinghorn. But they're shooting.
They play with new playmakers and get Donkey Weir into 12.
Get Donkey Weir into 12. That's the key, mate. That's what they're missing.
That changed the game. I don't think, imagine them two players on the pitch at the same time. I'd like it.
That would be gold. And the main man, Chris Harris, still at 13. He's really good. I like him.
He plays in the same team as Hastings, and he's still in the main man.
Yeah, yeah, but he's too good. I'm not sure Hastings.
Yeah, he's like, too good.
I don't really understand the Kinghorn thing. He actually, I think he set up I think it was Van der Merwe's try.
Daly. I'm not quite sure where he plays.
Yeah, and he's a good rugby player, but is he the number 2-10? For an international side that's supposed to be.
I thought he was a 15, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't watch much Scottish rugby, but I'm sure he came into the team as a winger or 15.
I'm pretty sure he was a 15.
But you're not going to get Hoggy out.
No, you're not. Even if he plays like he did, the other day. Did you see Shane Horgan's critique of Finn Russell?
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, wasn't it?
Yeah. So there's a clip.
I didn't even think he did much wrong in that clip.
He was just strolling around a bit, wasn't he? That is
actually pathetic.
Yeah, he was just kind of strolling around, but he called him absolutely pathetic. Compared him to like the likes of like Brian O'Driscoll, Dan Carter, and Johnny Wilkinson, saying that they would never ever do that. He was not very happy, basically. He was not very happy at all.
He wasn't a happy bunny.
No, he really wasn't. So
I guess while we're doing this, we should just move into the Scotland Italy game, because we're just talking about Scotland.
Yeah, that's true. Let's do quick predictions. I'm saying France 31, Wales 14.
I'll say France 28, Wales 10.
Okay.
Very similar.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right. So Scotland, Italy, and obviously we kind of semi jest about this being the wooden spoon match, but
I would really love Italy to win this. It would make my tournament.
It would be great for the competition, as we always say. It'd be great for the competition.
It's their best chance, probably.
It's their best. They're at home. They're against a Scotland side who, like you've said, have played badly three games in a row now. Obviously, managed to win one of those. But Scotland's campaign has really, really, it's gone from, here we go, we've beaten England again, we're on for the Grand Slam.
This has happened now.
Yeah, it is a strange one and a frustrating one. Like, I'm frustrated as an England fan, let alone, like, I can't imagine how Scotland fans must feel. But do we give...
It's a joke, isn't it?
It's like, yeah.
It's just every year they sort of build themselves up. Like, a couple of years ago, Scotland were sort of underdogs, but now they're actually a good side.
Yeah.
So they don't actually have that status anymore.
It's now disappointing. Yeah.
And we us rightfully expect Scotland to challenge.
Yeah.
And every year they sort of look like they're going to challenge and then just sort of go home. Just take their ball and go home.
Yeah, which do we give? So obviously Ireland battered Italy 57-6, but it was all a bit of a shambles because of Italy having to play with 13 men because of...
That's not even trying to explain
yeah,
it.
A hooker got injured, then a hooker got sent off, so that meant that they had to play with 13 for some reason. That's not for us to really try and solve at the moment, but other than the fact that we didn't really learn much about Ireland or Italy on that day because the game was over after... whatever it was, 20 minutes, 19 minutes.
Even with the red card, it was probably over. The second bit completely fucked it.
Exactly. But do we think Italy have got a chance, like a genuine chance here? Or are we still thinking that they don't score enough tries and they won't be good enough in the last 20?
I feel like before every Italy game, we sit here, we build ourselves up to think they've got a chance and then they quickly remind us that they're crap. Every week I'm building them up.
When Scotland are 40 points up at half time, we'll be like, oh yeah, okay. It would be fun. It would be great,
get
though.
Get Bruno on. He'll do a job.
It would be really fun. It would be really fun.
Even a close game would be good.
Yeah. Yeah, let's like, you're right, let's settle for a close game for now.
18-14 to Scotland.
18-14 to Scotland. That's got a good ring too, I reckon. Yeah, it's, I think that's good.
Bit of a rhyme. Lovely.
I think that's good. Let's go for 18-14 to Scotland. We'll both go with that. I'll stick with it. But actually, like 35-0 to Scotland.
that might be more accurate.
Right then, the big one of the weekend. England Ireland.
Where do we start?
what's interesting really about this is whoever loses this, their campaign's basically over. Even if Ireland win, they'd still need England to beat France. Whereas England, if they win their last two, then they've got a chance to win the tournament. Oh, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think on paper and in terms of how the teams are playing at the moment, you would 100% give it to Ireland. But England have shown some glimpses of being very good. And you feel at some point it's going to click. So you're just kind of hoping that it's, if you're an England fan, you're just kind of hoping that it's on Saturday.
It's
reckon?
One of them. I think England might win one of these last two games.
Yeah.
But I don't think they can win both. Because I think it's like, you think about the World Cup, it's like the semi-final and final. I think we'll get ourselves up to win one of these games. It's just which one do we get up to win?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. Like, I think Eddie's even spoken about that, hasn't he?
Take a loss.
Say again.
And he's not rotating the team at all, really.
Nope.
So all the players are going to have to put everything into one of the... If you just put, like, 90% effort into one, these both games will probably lose. You need 110 and probably 8 you need a ball.
Yeah. I think which we, for a little peek behind the curtain, I spoke to Jack Knoll at the end of last week, which you'll hear from him later. And he kind of said that it was a really good time for them to have a fallow week because it gave them much more time to kind of narrow in on the detail for this game, make sure their bodies are rested and like ready to go. So I think it was it's a good time to be going back to back against Ireland and France, because they've had that time to really get into the detail of it. So it'd be interesting to see if
I do worry sometimes off. That with England trying to play with too much detail. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And you know, it's not American football at the end of the day.
No, and you've got Marcus Smith, so just give the boy the ball and let him play.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when we see it for Quinn's.
I thought Dom Brandt was excellent against Wales, and he is now a doubt because he's got COVID.
How dare he go and get the COVID?
Yeah, it's not hugely helpful.
Why are we still testing him anyway? Just pretend he did not do it.
Yeah, well, I was reading that obviously now in real life he actually doesn't have to do anything, but it's RFU guidelines are still saying that you can't come to training, which is probably sensible, to be fair.
RFU makes some interesting decisions. It's like, England under 20s can play at Doncaster. No, you can't play in the Premiership at that ground. It's rubbish.
Oh, mate, that's like a 3-hour special all in itself, that is. Who do you think comes in for Dom Brandt? Do you think they just shuffle around and put Curry at 8?
If he is ruled out, he will definitely put Curry at 8 and infuriate everybody. Because Underhill's back in. I love Sam Underhill, but I don't know. I don't feel like, I know Everett to say he's fine, but he's had a lot of concussions. And, you know, I don't want to make any specialist decisions on his part, but it just feels a bit, always a bit fast.
I'd be secretly pretty happy if he came out tomorrow and was like, I'm retiring.
Yeah.
I just worry about him.
I'd love him to sort of get to the World Cup. He's a great player. I love
him. Oh, he's unreal. He's absolutely unreal. Yeah.
I hope he's absolutely fine, but you do worry about him a bit.
Yeah.
Same with quite a few players. You know, Etzebeth's had quite a few knocks. Yeah. Bowden Barrett's had quite a few nasty knocks.
George North,
Reece Patchell.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. But like you say, hopefully he'll be absolutely grand and win us a World Cup next year. Would you bring him straight back in, or do you think it's a bit early?
I think he will do, you know.
Do you reckon?
A lot of pundits want him to play Barbary at 6, and I'm like, I don't know if I've ever seen him play 6, but it's strange.
I think I have, but then I think playing 6 for Wasps against, say, Worcester is very different against playing 6 against Ireland. So I'm not sure I'd do that.
You hear saying they want to play, and it's like, I'm not sure how much they've actually watched them play or how much they've read.
To be fair, that would solve the...
I want to see him capped. So, and we're getting close to the World Cup now, so it's like, we need to get these players in.
That would solve some, like genuinely, that would solve some ball-carrying issues, because we obviously lost Manu before the Wales game, and he's not going to be fit. So I assume it will stay as it was. Maybe with Marchand back in, if he gets back. But having Barbary there as a bit of a trucker in midfield would be no bad thing.
No, I'm already curiously looking ahead at the summer, to be honest, for the Australia tour, just to think how will that squad shape up compared to this one. Will he leave some more senior players at home and finally get some new names on the pitch? It'll be interesting, I think. I probably need a blend.
Yeah, I'm just looking through the current squad now. So Barbary's uncapped. So you're absolutely right. If he's going to feature in the World Cup, he needs to start playing some international rugby. Ollie Chessam has got one cap, obviously. I thought he went all right, by the way. He was fine.
Yeah.
Nick Dolly's got one cap. With all due respect, I don't see him being around this squad for the foreseeable.
No, I think Blairmeyer's more of the player than you need to push forward.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can start in a win against South Africa and then sort of just get booted out. Not booted out, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You start that game and then you don't feature in any of the Six Nations games so far. Yeah. It just seems a bit... Especially when he's the young up-and-coming player.
Yeah.
Andy originally just left Jamie George out in the autumn before bringing him in.
He did.
So it just seems like he's gone back on what he was thinking and that. Sort of. I think he was thinking of going forward with Luke Cowan-Dickie and then Blairmeyer off the bench.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's probably realised that he can just do Cal, Nicky and George either way round.
Yeah.
Because they're both so good and they're both good impact players off the bench as well.
I actually think George is the better player, controversially. And a lot of people prefer Cal and Dickie, but I prefer George.
I think he's a better rugby player. I think Cal and Dickie probably fits the Exeter Chiefs side and this England side probably a bit more at the moment, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But yeah, in terms like skill set wise, I think James George is unreal. He's so good. Right, we're kind of going around the houses here. Where are we landing on for this game? What do we think?
I'm gonna go England 14. I love 14. Ireland 16.
England 14, Ireland 16. So you okay. Well, for those listeners that think we're biased, look, he's not even choosing England there, so oh God.
But every time I choose England, they're just rubbish. So hopefully, you know, I'll work the other way.
Yeah. I agree with the result. I'm actually not sure if England will get that close, which is a bit upsetting for me to say. I'm going to say England 15, Ireland 22. I think.
I can imagine it being like 22-8 and we'll get a lit try. And
like, yeah, ah! Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah, which papers over some cracks.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we move on, I just can't believe we didn't mention Antoine Dupont. He just keeps getting.
Like, there's nothing to say,
mate.
You know,
what
incredible.
What an absolute joke of a player. I'm so excited to see him carve up against Wales on Friday night.
It makes me want to have a Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere sort of game now. So we can have him in the team. It'll probably just be the French team, to be fair.
That would be sick. French, yeah. Oh, would you throw Marcus Smith in, or would you leave him to Mac there? Dupont and Marcus Smith would be pretty cool.
Out of curiosity, you want to see it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But realistically, you'd probably leave Roman in there.
Smith would probably be on the bench. Would you be good enough?
Yeah, good impact player. Well, mate, we should probably leave it there and we should probably throw over to my chat with Jack Knoll from earlier in the week. He gives a much better idea of what's actually going on in the Six Nations and obviously specifically within the England camp. So enjoy my chat with Jack Knoll. So we are delighted to be joined by a man who's got 146 appearances for the Exeter Chiefs, 36 England caps, 2 British and Irish Lions caps. He is an under-20 World Cup winner, a Six Nations Grand Slam winner, a 2-time Premiership winner, a Heineken Champions Cup winner, and he's currently pursuing another Six Nations title. Jack Knoll, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on. How are you doing?
No worries. How are you doing? Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, man. Not too bad. Enjoying a weekend off, which is quite nice.
Yeah, yeah, very nice. So, yeah, you're on the fallow week this week. So, yeah, let's dive straight into that. How does this week kind of compare to a test week for you guys? Are you at home at the moment?
We are, yeah. It's obviously a very different compared to a test week. Normally, we're in most of the week, but this is our second fallow week. So, we've actually got... we've actually been given Monday, Tuesday off. We're back in the camp tomorrow for the Wednesday until Friday, and then we've got the weekend off, which is quite nice. So it's a good chance to refresh and to recharge again.
Very nice. So you back down in Devon, enjoying the sunshine down there?
Sunshine is flooding down here today, I reckon. But I'm back home, obviously, two little girls. So any chance to get home and see them, which is obviously makes it a lot better. So Yeah, just down in Devon, and our camp next week's in Bristol, so it's actually quite nice for us just now up the road.
Nice.
So not too far to travel.
Is that at the Bears training ground or?
No, I don't think we're there. I think we're at Clifton College. I think we're training there.
Oh yeah, I know it well. Decent setup.
Yeah,
decent setup.
Yeah.
So just on that kind of home life thing, obviously you're. You know, you're still a young man, a relatively new dad. Have you found that really helps to kind of help you switch off when you do have these moments outside of training and outside of camp? Does it really help you to switch off having that thing that takes probably your entire attention when you get home?
No, absolutely. I think even if I don't want to switch off, you do find yourself switching off. No, I think it's been awesome. Like I've had different ways of switching off from rugby, and I think it sounds weird, but to completely switch off from the game helps you when you are involved in the game. So I've always had stuff at home. So like I've never had anything to do with rugby in my house. So never, no shirts hung up, no caps anywhere, no balls anywhere. Like it's literally strictly home life. And then, yeah, having two little girls then has obviously cemented that as well, because, you know, when I come home, they have no idea what I'd be doing or what I do or training or anything like that. They obviously enjoy coming to watch games and stuff, but it's straight back into parenting and looking after them. So, yeah, it does. It completely switches you off, whether you've had a bad day, a good day. You know, they don't really care. You come home and you spend it with them and you make sure they're okay. So it's certainly helped me. Through injuries, through performances, through games, through wins and losses. So no, it's been good, and I've obviously enjoyed, you know, making their life as exciting as I can and giving them what I can. So yeah, I would say it's certainly helped my rugby since having them.
Good. Well, I'm pleased to hear that. And you're recently engaged, aren't you?
We are. Yeah.
Congratulations. Nori's
now, well, she's nearly four. So I've had the pressure for 4 years of obviously Nori not having this, Zoe not having the same name as Nori. So yeah, the pressure has been piling on, and I've held out for 4 years, but yeah, she's got to me in the end. So yeah, we're recently engaged, and we're actually going to get married in the next couple of months, I think, after Six Nations.
Oh, very good.
So it's all been done pretty quickly, but she's desperate to get the same name as the girls and to become officially part of the family. So, you know, she's waited long enough. I can't blame her.
And how's the planning going for all of that? Are you hands on with that, or are you staying out of it?
Mate, honestly, I reckon we've had more fallouts. Like when people say they have fallouts about weddings, I'm like, yeah, well, like it's probably not that bad. Surely yeah. It'd be pretty straightforward. Honestly, we've had more fallouts than we've ever had in our whole lives. I can't get over it. And I've been away for the whole time, pretty much, for Six Nations. And we still managed to have arguments on the phone, arguments when I'm back home. But no, she's taken most of the workload, luckily, and I'm just there to give my views on stuff, say. So
nod along.
No, it's been okay. Yeah, I was nod along, and whatever you want, babe, you can have. It's fine. Don't worry about it. So no, it's been a bit full on recently, but no, I think it's all sorted now, and it should be an exciting day.
Good. Well, congratulations on that. Yeah, hope it's
thank you.
Hope it all goes smoothly for you. Going back into the rugby side of things, how was obviously a very, very good win last weekend against Wales? How was the mood in camp, kind of in the change rooms, and a couple of days after that?
Yeah, I think it's obviously really good. Like, I think if you win any game in the Six Nations, it's a tough win. There's no easy game, especially against Wales. So the mood's good, but I know that there's obviously a bit of frustration there as well. Obviously, we felt that we didn't play at our best, which is obviously very pleasing to think that we've come away with a win against a tough Wales team, and still know that we've got a lot more in the tank and we can be better. So, you know, I think we're going to need to be better against Ireland in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, I think the mood's good. It's positive. I know training over the last few weeks have been pretty good as well. So it's set us up nicely for these games. So yeah, it's good. You can't really complain at the moment. But like I said, Ireland's going to be a different challenge. But again, it's at Twickenham and the one that we're confident for.
Is there anything specific after that game that you want to improve? Obviously, you can improve on everything all the time, but is there anything specific that came away from that Wales game, or is that what will be discussed when you get back into camp tomorrow?
I think that will be discussed, but from like the little conversations we had, we let teams always going to have their moments in the game, but maybe we let Wales have too many moments, especially in that second half. But again, the positives of what we achieved in that game, what we done, we built a good score in the first half. We were pretty dominant in the first half. So again, there's a lot of positives to take away from that. But again, yeah, Ireland are going to be a different team, but one that we need to be pretty switched on for throughout the whole game. So a lot of the detail will probably be done to the end of this week, and then obviously going into next week as well.
Yeah, okay. And more generally, just kind of on you specifically, I'm sure it's a question you've been asked a lot recently, so I apologize if you're just saying the same answer again, but can you just tell us how good it feels to be kind of back in amongst it, back in camp? Because, you know, you've obviously had a tricky few years. I think it was over 1,000 days in between England starts or England caps or something like that because of various injuries. So yeah. you must be buzzing to be back, right?
Yeah, so good. I think the fact that I've worked so hard to get back and I am back involved now is probably a lot, you know, makes it sweeter. Because obviously the hard work isn't done. I'm working extremely, extremely hard now, but there was a lot of dark days and, you know, frustration of like watching the boys play and not being involved and another squad being announced and obviously not being involved. So, but I knew it was all for a bigger purpose, and I knew I wasn't at my best. And, you know, there would have been a couple of camps where I could have been involved in it maybe, but, you know, in terms of the jeopardy of my career and my length of my career, probably wasn't best for me at that stage. So a lot of those hard decisions that I made, you know, over the last couple of years have definitely paid off, and I knew it would, but it's very hard to make those decisions when you're in that moment. So for example, after the final against Harlequins, you know, we lost. And then there was those two summer games and I was, you know, pretty excited and lined up to hopefully be involved in the squads. And, you know, I had a conversation with Eddie literally the day before the squad was announced. And I said, look, I probably don't think it's the best I come into camp. And he agreed. He was like, look, you need to get your bounce back in your step. You're not fit. You need to get fit. You need to get time away from rugby and then come back. And, you know, that was a hard decision at the time to sit there and agree with him and say, I need time away. But like I said, now I've done that. I'm so glad I've done that. And I've come back and I'm better and I'm feeling better. I'm feeling bouncier. I'm feeling fitter. And obviously I'm involved in the England squad. So, you know, that's the main thing that I wanted from it. And the fact I'm here now, you know, I've still got a long way to go still. You know, to get a first 80 under my belt against Wales last week was massive, but I still know I've got a lot more to give and a lot more to add. So, you know, hopefully that'll come over the next few weeks.
Well, I'm pretty confident that I speak for pretty much every England fan that we're very, very pleased to see you back on the pitch, mate.
Thank you.
England rugby is a much better place when you're involved. So it's good to see you back. It really is. We kind of alluded to it there, and we don't need to hang on this for too long because you've done enough of this over the last few years. But you mentioned there was obviously some pretty dark points and some low moments throughout those few years. It might be family having chatted about it earlier, but how did you kind of deal with those moments? Because I assume there must have been some times where you thought, you know, like, is this really worth it? Like, I'm putting my body through a lot of shit here. And seeming, you know, I think the most frustrating thing was that, you know, you'd get everyone excited, you'd get back for a couple of games and then unfortunately pick something up again.
Yeah.
What were you kind of doing to deal with those mental lows?
So the weird thing is I knew that everything that happened was probably my own fault. Like, everyone was telling me around that you probably need a couple more weeks. You've come back from your foot up, you're rushing this. Why push it 2 weeks when you could, you know, have a couple more weeks off and then be 100%. But me being me, they were all around, like, it was around Six Nations last year. And I was like, no, I want to get back for that. And I'll play 2 weeks early because then I'll play for Exeter, then hopefully get picked up by England and go play with England. And obviously, if I did everything the club asked, then they were happy for me to play. And then I tore my hamstring or something before the Sale game, I think I remember, which then put me out for another 8 weeks. So, like, I know they're all my own fault. And after I did it, I was just thinking, like, how stupid am I to have done that? And now I'm out for 8 weeks where I could have just waited another week and I would have been fine. But so I knew that was kind of the issue. And that happened a couple of times, believe it or not. But like I said earlier, once you're in that moment, it's very hard to pull yourself out of that moment and think of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So because I kind of knew it was my own fault, I always try and find the positive in things. So the way I was dealing with it was kind of back into rehab, back into weights. You know, I'm getting myself fit. I'm still training hard. I'm swimming. I'm lifting. I'm doing my rehab and getting other bits of my body ready. So that was kind of, I was always trying to flip it into a positive. But again, like I said earlier, it's probably just stuff away from rugby. So obviously we had the COVID times as well, which obviously everyone had time out. So obviously I had a lot of rehab time in that. So I was just doing loads of stuff. Like you said, kids obviously kept me occupied, coming home, switching off completely from them. summertime, I love being in the water, doing anything like that. I obviously did a fair bit of work with mustard as well, the clove and stuff. So that took my mind off it completely. I know I was still rehabbing and doing my stuff in the background, but then I had this other thing, which was completely away from rugby, to focus on and to get my teeth into a little bit as well. So yeah, it was kind of just anything really away from rugby, which was keeping me focused on rugby at the same time.
And is the, I remember reading something about you having finding a bit of a Lego obsession. Is that still going strong, or is that?
Yeah, I've always had a Lego obsession since I was a kid. Yeah. You know, a lot of kids play with Lego, and I never stopped it. So I've done a Land Rover Defender. I've got a Harley up there. Nice. I've got the Lamborghini to make the Technic stuff as well. So I'm quite excited, but I need to set my time to make that sort of stuff.
Have you got the little ones into that yet? Or are they a little bit young for it?
They're not into the little Lego yet, but into the big blocks. Yeah. They love it, making their Elsa, Frozen towers and Elsa towers and stuff like that. Decent. So yeah, they're getting into it as well.
Nice, very good. Do you want to just tell us a little bit more about the mustard stuff? Just tell us what's been going on there and what you've been up to.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough. So Tom Cheeseman is the guy that found it back in 2015. I actually went to school to college with his wife. And I think it was back then. Nesh asked if I could have a couple of t-shirts, if I would be happy to take a couple of t-shirts from him, and I was like, yeah, cool, no worries. Like, I'd love to give it a go. Really like the stuff. And you know what it's like for rugby players? It's very hard to try and find clothes that fit you and stay decent through washes and wear and stuff like that. So anyway, I had these t-shirts back in the day, and I was like, these are pretty cool. Like, I actually really like the idea of this. And again, from being Tom's from Cornwall as well. So he was just up the road in Bodmin. So I was like, oh no, it's something I've wanted to get into making my own stuff and just to see where it went. So it was probably 2015 Tom started it, and it probably wasn't, basically into COVID, start of COVID, I gave him a phone call. I said, look, I'll be interested in linking up with you if you guys would be happy to have me, and just see what we can do together and see if we can make some cool stuff. And he was like, yeah. And obviously it was COVID, so we had a lot of time on both our hands. So yeah, we came up with some pretty cool stuff, and we just see where we could take it. And yeah, I think we've done pretty well. We're making some pretty cool stuff. You know, we've obviously got a lot of stuff lined up for the future as well. Hopefully when now COVID's starting to dampen down a little bit and things like that. So yeah, it's quite exciting. Obviously I've got a few of the rugby boys representing it as well, which gets out there, which is obviously my part of it, which is quite easy for me. And it's like, here you go, lads. You know, rugby players, like anything free, they're like, yeah, I'll have it. So yeah, I've got a few of the boys wearing it and stuff like that. So we're just gonna we'll see where it, make some cool stuff and see where we can take it, to be honest.
Yeah, nice. Well, we'll make sure we put links in the episode description for people to check that out. So everyone that's listening, go and have a look at that, because it's decent stuff. So a couple of really big games coming up, right, in the Six Nations. You've obviously still got a chance of winning the tournament, assuming that you guys can do the double over.
Win all our games.
Ireland and France, yeah, right, correct. Which, with how those teams have started in the tournament, you know, they've started pretty well, basically. They're looking pretty strong.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, with the amount of talent you guys have got in the squad, you'll obviously back yourself to win against anyone in the world. And you've shown over the last few years that you can do that. But are there any kind of key things that you think you'll need to do really well against those teams specifically? Or is it just do everything as well as possible and then you get the win?
Yeah, pretty much that. Yeah. I think, yeah, we've kind of, it's pretty much knockout rugby now, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? If we lose on one more game, we're not really a chance of us winning it. So we've kind of treated it as knockout rugby, which kind of frees us up a little bit. No, we've not looked into France really at all. Obviously, now we've finished Wales, we'll look into Ireland. But like you said, they're playing some good rugby at the moment. They've got some dangerous players. And like when you play any Irish side, you know, if you give them time on the ball, they will, you know, create something. They've got those players that can. You've got Sexton that likes to run the game. And when he's got time on the ball, he, you know, can put his team in some good positions. So, you know, it's almost taking time away from them. So our defence is obviously key. But then, like you said, we've got some exciting players in our team now. which, you know, those glimpses it against Wales, some of the attacking rugby that we're playing is, you know, is proper exciting. So, you know, we want to try and focus on what we can bring as well and make them defend us. But, you know, when they do have their time on the ball, we've got to, you know, suffocate them as well. So, like you said, they are on form at the moment. It's going to be a close game. But again, we do back ourselves. We're at Twickenham as well, which is obviously, you know, special for us boys. And we know how much this game means for us to win. So, yeah, hopefully we can, you know, have a good training week this week. Extra couple of days, which are key in terms of learning and stuff like that. But then I'm sure we'll go into next week, you know, all guns blazing.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I think it's a good week for, I reckon it's a good week for a fallow week, isn't it? Just to really like dial in and get into some more detail ahead of that Ireland game.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you've got those big teams, you know, it could be anyone now, but also it gives the squad time to freshen up a little bit as well, which is obviously a positive side of it as well. But yeah, it is. And then we're into those, you know, the two big games at the end. So hopefully, you know, back-to-back ones as well. So hopefully we'll do a job this weekend and then we can, you know, move on and play the decided game.
Fingers crossed. I'm looking forward to it. You mentioned that, you know, we're seeing glimpses of a really exciting attacking potential within the England team. If I can just pick your brain on a couple of players specifically, that'd be great. Obviously, yeah. There's a bunch of hype around him, and rightly so. He deserves all the hype he's getting at the moment. But young Marcus Smith, I mean, as an England fan, I'm obviously very, very excited about what he's up to and what he might be up to over the next few years. Can you just tell us a little bit about how it is training with him, playing with him, and just watching him do his thing?
It's awesome. Like, obviously, we've played against him enough times, and yeah, he pretty much won them a final, which beat us at Twickenham last season. So, I know I'm actually really enjoying playing with him for once. But yeah, everything he does for club, and you know, obviously, we spend a lot of time looking at other teams, and when you're playing against them, especially. So yeah, it's quite nice to have that in your side as well. Now, using it as one of your weapons when you're playing against a team. But everything he's done for club, he's obviously doing for country as well, which is, you know, the most pleasing thing. He, like I said, he's very exciting, attacking. He can defend, kick. He's getting his kicks, you know, which is obviously key at international. But yeah, he's bringing that excitement from his attack from the club level into an England setup. When obviously, you know, England are playing a game which kind of suits that as well, which allows him to, you know, get his goose step in and get his dummies and stuff like that. So, you know, the fact that the team around him are playing similar as well obviously helps him. And it's just kind of the way the England want to go over the next couple of years, playing this free-flowing, exciting rugby, which is obviously class for players like me that like to get my hands on the ball and play as well, so be amongst that. So, yeah, the fact that the whole team are kind of driving in that direction as well, there's no headbutting, there's no going against each other, kind of all going in the same direction. So, it's awesome to be able to witness that and play with that as well.
Does your game adjust much depending on kind of who you've got at fly half? So whether you're playing with, you know, Joe at Exeter or George Ford or Owen Farrell for England and now Marcus Smith, does your game change depending on who's kind of playing inside, or do you just kind of do what you do regardless?
I'd say, yeah, I kind of do what I do regardless, I think. But obviously, if things do change in terms of the weather, obviously makes a massive difference. And then if the weather's different, then obviously you're going to drop into a bit more of a kicking game, which means then a less attack in your own half, which means getting into their half. But then obviously when we get our hands on the ball in their half, is obviously that's where my normal game comes along. I get to float, I get to do what I want to do, get my hands on the ball as much as I can. But you know, obviously when you've got boys like Marcus who likes to run it a lot himself, there's always those opportunities for him to make a half break and an offload or just be around them and stuff like that. So yeah, I think a lot does change the way I play in terms of who we've got to fly half. But very much just it's depending on what the team want to do on that week, whether we want to, you know, go to our kicking game because of the weather, because of the wind or anything, or is right just the right situation because the team we're playing against, or we are going to play this attacking rugby. Hopefully the weather's good and things like that. So yeah, there's a lot of factors that can change the way I play personally.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And then the other player I'd like to ask you about is someone you might be slightly reluctant to give too many compliments about based on what I've heard you say in the past, but your old mate Henry Slade, he's just I just feel like he's really, really become a kind of key figure within that England midfield now. Like he's obviously nailed down whichever shirt Eddie seems to want to give him, either 12 or 13, And I just think he's become a really key influential player within that squad. And it hasn't obviously hasn't come out of nowhere. He's always been a real world-class player. But I just feel like recently, the last year or so, he's just become a really influential member of the squad. And now he's sorted his hair out as well, which is a great bonus.
Couldn't now the mullet's gone.
Yeah, correct. Which actually, to be fair, probably isn't too popular down your way. But can you just talk a little bit about how you see his role has kind of changed in the last year or so, if you think it has, or have you always seen him as that kind of key player?
He's always done that for us at Exeter. And I think the way the rugby is over the last, you know, 5-6 years is all about having that second ball player at 12 or 13, wherever you mix it up, wherever they go. But you always have your ball player at 10, but then it's having another option as a 12 who can play 12 and 13. To be your second ball player, your second kicker and things like that. And that's just the way rugby is at the moment. Then you tend to have your big ball carrier at 12 or 13, depending on moves or whatever like that. But, you know, Exeter, it's kind of irrelevant of what number you got on your back. It's kind of just positions for those set moves, which is, you know, benefited a lot of teams over the last few years. And, you know, I won't say too much about Henry, because he'll go straight to his head. He's been class for Exeter, and it's been exactly what we needed. You know, it helps boys like me that are out on the wing, because you've got a lot more chance to get the ball with another ball player in 12 or another ball player 13, which is quite happy to shift the ball along. And obviously, if it's all about his form and, you know, backing up performances, and he's done that for Exeter for so many years now. And being around the England squad, it's just that next step is to do that on an international level. And you see the little touches he's got in the game. You know, the 50-22 at the weekend, you know, it was an unbelievable kick.
Silly.
But it can change a whole way the game plays, just from a little moment like that. And when he can add little things like that into the game, it obviously helps our team. You know, if you look back a few years ago, Sarri's in the semi-final, he puts a penalty kick off his left foot 5 metres out from the touchline. You know, we get a mauling try and score. So when you can add those little things, that those moments that mean so much to a team, you know, it's priceless to have that in your squad. So, yeah, I think he's deserved it. He's obviously worked hard to get there. But like you said, then he's kind of benefiting from it now, because he is doing that on an international level as well.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the 50-22 as a winger? Kind of probably impacts you as a back three member more than other players. Are you a fan or...?
I am a fan. I think it's I think a lot of people thought we'd see more before it came in. It's actually a very hard skill to do and to perform. Mm. But obviously, yeah, as a back three, you've got to be wary of that, especially in the, you know, obviously when they're in their own half. So yeah, it does change the backfield a little bit. But again, if you're worried too much about filling the backfield, obviously it opens up space in the front line as well. So, you know, there are. As exciting it is to put a kick in and get a line out in the backfield in the 22. At the same time, if teams are going to defend that, the space in the front line is awesome. So to see that open up and see a bit more run of rugby is again another positive of it. So I'm a fan of it. And like I said, it's still a hard skill to have. So you're not seeing it all the time in every game. You may be seeing one or two, or even none sometimes. So. You know, it's a little tweak of the game which has made it, you know, a lot more exciting, I think.
Yeah, it feels like one of the few rule changes that has actually been received pretty well. Like I think most people are generally on board with it, which is quite nice, because that's sometimes not the way. So
yeah, and not all the new rules, boys. Obviously, a lot of teams are behind at the moment. So yeah, I think that's one that might stick around. I know I can see a couple of rules maybe changing. Further on down the line, but yeah, I think that's one rule that might stay.
Yeah. So we were mentioning Exeter there when talking about Slade. So we'll stay on that theme. Been a bit of a strange season for you guys, for the Chiefs this year. Probably fair to say that you haven't been firing on all cylinders all year, but in the last few weeks, particularly, you've really kind of stepped up a gear. You know, qualified for knockout round of Europe, into the top four now, 4 wins on the bounce in the Prem, really good win at the weekend. So definitely kind of getting up to where we like to see Exeter being, where we expect to see you guys being. Did you manage to catch the game on Sunday, or did you have a day off?
No, I did. I did. I watched it. It was an awesome game to watch.
Yeah,
but yeah, it kind of sums up where we are as a team at the moment. You know, there are games we've lost by 3 points or a last minute decision. Do you know what I mean? And there's games we've won by last minute points, like at the weekend, for example. So it's, like you said, it's kind of where we're at as a team. We're not 100%. We've obviously had injuries throughout the year. We've had boys out on international duties, which obviously mixed the squad up and then added to the injuries as well. It's, you know, there's a lot of young boys playing, which obviously isn't a bad thing as well, because we're getting a lot of experience in the squad now, which is awesome. So that squad's experiencing, you know, wins and tight losses and tight wins as well. So that's good for the squad in all. And like you said, we are fourth now, which is, I don't know how we've got up there, but we're in a position now where we've got a lot more, you know, a lot more power in our hands, where, you know, we've got three teams above us. We're not chasing a lot of stuff. And don't get me wrong, look, I know there's probably 1 or 2 points between fourth and eighth or something, I think, at the moment. So, but the fact we're up there and it's in our hands now is pretty pleasing. But yeah, I think it's all about the experience of the squad. And at the same time, if we can still keep ourselves up there to get ourselves in those playoffs at the end of the year, will mean a lot to us. And like you said about the Europe stuff, you know, we're happy to be through on that now, but we know we've got a tough couple of games against Munster. So, you know, hopefully Six Nations will be over. We've got a fully fit squad, and we get to fire into that competition again. So we know what it tastes like to get to the finals and stuff like that now. So it's something we certainly want as a team to do it again. So yeah, hopefully we're kind of through our bumpy patch. We can start now, you know, raising the roof a little bit and firing off again.
Do you think that kind of, I mean, obviously you guys reached the final last year as well, but do you think that slight kind of transition period and a bit of a reset was kind of necessary after winning the double? Because obviously that's kind of achieving everything you're pushing towards. Presumably it's pretty hard to, you know, back that up straight away, the amount of effort and emotion that must go into that.
Yeah, it is hard, because obviously it's the emotional high of, like you said, double champs, and then literally you've got the... that's the emotional side of it, but then you've got the physical side of it, where, you know, you play a lot longer than any other team then, because you play in a semi-final of that, a semi-final of another competition, and two finals. So before you know it, you've had an extra 2 weeks of, you know, high games, high intensity games, where other boys have had 2 weeks off, and then that delays your pre-season. Then you have a short pre-season and you're straight back into pre-season games before you even know it. So that's that side of it. But again, yeah, like you said, like every team has it, where, you know, you'll have certain players in the squad that are, I've won a double, I've won a European, and I've won a Premiership in 1 year. I'm happy with that, and that's as far as I want to go. And then it's quite hard then to bring yourselves back up to that emotional energy to go again.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the hardest things to do, I think, in the team, is then trying to get you back on the same level, to being like, look, lads, we've done that, it was good, but we're going to have to go again, and if we want to do it again, if we don't want to be just a mid-season, a mid-table team, especially going from where we've been. And I think we've got enough players in the squad that aren't happy with what we've got, aren't happy with winning a couple of Prems and a European. They want to go on more and win more. So, you know, there's certainly a few of us in the squad that like help to drive that and help to get that into boys, and the fact that we want to go again and we want to win more trophies, because, you know, we can sit back when we retire and think about all the good things we've done. But when you're in it, you know, the way I feel, we've been in what, six finals now, I think, six Prem finals and won two. We've come so close every year and not won as many as what we wanted to. So that's pretty disappointing in itself. So that's why I want to carry on and get into these big games and hopefully winning more trophies.
Yeah, for sure. So big game this weekend for Exeter, home against Sale. Is it kind of a bittersweet thing when you get these fallow weeks? Obviously, it's amazing to be in the England camp, but when you get these fallow weeks, like I know how much, like, I mean, everyone that plays Exeter absolutely loves playing for Exeter. So is it kind of bittersweet? Would you like to go back and play and get some more game time under your belt and be with the boys, or are you pretty is the body pretty happy having the week off?
The body's certainly happy having the week off. I'm not going to lie about that. Yeah, it's a weird one, because the England games and England training is so intense and it's tough. Like, you do appreciate the weekends off, and you know, you obviously do feel a bit sorry for the lads that that are in, you know, Scott, Hoggy will come back now and play, and Sam Skinner potentially, depending on what the club want to do. And it is tough to back it up and go in between. But obviously, when you're in England mode, you're in England mode, and that's what you focus on. And you keep an eye on the team and see how they're getting on. But yeah, to back it up would be quite difficult to drop in and out. So, you know, obviously, we're in a position in England where we don't do that. But yeah, it is quite tough. I know speaking to some of the lads, it is quite tough. But at the same time, when you see your club in a tough position, you obviously want to do all you can to help and to be involved and to help the boys get a win. So it's a tough one. But yeah, I think the way we are going at the moment with our form, and like we said about some of the young boys, the way they're playing at the moment, like Hodgie at the weekend was awesome. Ollie Woodburn, how good was he? Flats, we always know how good Flats is anyway. So for me as a back three player, I'm not too worried about the boys, because those boys are carving up and doing a job. So it's actually quite nice to watch.
Yeah, Woodburn's finish was pretty outrageous, wasn't it?
Oh, it was class, wasn't it? It was so good.
And is Hodge as fast as he looks watching him on the telly?
Yeah.
Like, is he that fast?
He is. Yeah, he is that fast.
Is there anyone quicker at Exeter or not?
I think between him and Hoggy, I think Hodge is probably a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Absolute wheels. I bet he can't kick it as far as Hoggy though. So
I don't know. Hodge's got a pretty mean left foot as well, I think. Yeah.
Watch out then, Stuart Hogg. Watch out.
Yeah, I know.
Well, mate, I don't want to take too much more of your time. So just want to finish by saying thank you very much for coming on. We'd love to chat to you. And good luck for the rest of the Six Nations. Good luck for the rest of the season with Exeter. And it's really, really, really good to see you back on the pitch and doing your thing, mate. So keep it up.
Awesome.
Fingers crossed for you for the rest of the year. And hopefully we'll chat to you again soon.
Awesome, mate. Thanks a lot. It means a lot, mate. Cheers for that.
Cheers, Jack. And that does it for episode 26 of Not Another Rugby Podcast, brought to you by ruck.co.uk and Altius Images. Thanks again to Jack Knoll for coming on the pod to chat to us. It was awesome to get the insight from inside the England camp. Remember to check out that clothing brand Mustard in the episode description down below. You can find us on Twitter at Ruck Rugby and Instagram at ruck.co.uk, and just search Ruck Rugby to find us on TikTok and Facebook. You can visit our website, ruck.co.uk, for all of the latest rugby news and features, and links to all of our channels on our website can be found in the episode description as well. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to, rate and share the podcast. Enjoy the weekend of rugby, and we will see you next week.